So, for tonight's talk, I prepared a meticulously researched talk that drawed on many sources, and I was going to do a substantial integration of on the topic of faith in Pure Land and Zen. And I prepared a great deal of notes and put them in a folder, and then I left the folder on my desk at work. So, lest any of you be yes, excellently, you anticipated my point, which is lest any of you believe that years of practice of Zazen or Zen in general somehow protects us from being idiots. It doesn't, in fact, do that, and it doesn't protect us from getting sick, growing old, and dying, and it doesn't protect us really from anything. If we're using our Zazen for a purpose, even if that purpose is to, like, you know, function better somehow in our life, our Zazen is going to fail us. There's ways in which Zazen helps you, but the trick of it is you have to do Zazen for no reason at all. And then you get all of these things, perhaps a little insight, perhaps a little peace of mind, perhaps you maybe age a touch more gracefully, but all of those things are side effects. This is also related to the talk I gave a couple of months ago about that very venerable senior Western Dharma teacher who is apparently going quite senile. And for me, that was a big teaching of the same point, because I realized that I thought that Zazen somehow protected you from that, at least if you attained it at that level of shravar, you know. But tonight, instead, what I would like to do is read a couple of bits from two different books that aren't particularly related, though perhaps the one will serve as a frame for the other, and then maybe we'll have a little bit of discussion about anything that either of these readings stirs up for anyone, or in fact anything else that anyone wants to bring up, with the exception of deep questions about self-power and other power and the nature of faith, which we'll address at a later time. Unless, of course, Kate would like to, the first pieces that I'm going to read are a few excerpts from that appear in this book called Dogen's Manuals of Zen Meditation by Carl Bielefeld, who is a scholar and a translator. And I asked him one time in person, you know, so are you a practitioner? And do you practice? And I met him shortly after my time at Zen Mountain Monastery, where there was kind of an unspoken and sometimes, in fact, spoken teaching that if you're not logging hours and hours and hours and hours of Zazen, ideally at Zen Mountain Monastery, then you really aren't, doing the Dharma. And so from that kind of perspective, I said, so, Carl, do you practice? And he says, well, I'm not a practitioner, but I'm a believer. And I found that really hugely liberating. And these pieces that I am going to read, it's actually an appendix that is comparative translation of different of Dogen's meditation manuals. And so without carefully sourcing any of these for you, I'm just going to read you a few, but they come from the Fukan Zazengi and the Shobo Genzo and a text called Tsung Tse's Chan Yuan Ching Kui Tsao Zhong Chai, which I think if I saw this in Japanese, I would recognize it, but that's in Wade Giles Chinese. But I think what that is I think Tso Chan Yi is Zazengi. So I think that this is an older Soto manual. It wasn't Dogen's, but so I'm going to read a little bit about these, a little bit from here. And Dogen's Zen is the Zen of, you'll hear some of it, but it can sound metaphysical, it can sound philosophical, it can sound just downright peculiar, but Dogen Zen, it's really fascinating to just kind of let some of it unfold for you over time. And he's kind of, in many ways, uniquely dense. The bodhisattva who studies prajna should first arouse the thought of great compassion, make extensive vows, and then carefully cultivate samadhi. Vowing to save sentient beings, he should not seek liberation for himself alone. That piece was actually from that first manual, the one that isn't Dogen, and I didn't intend to read it. Further evidence that... All right, here we go, from the Fukan Zazengi. Fundamentally speaking, the basis of the way is perfectly pervasive. How could it be contingent on practice and verification? The vehicle of the ancestors is naturally unrestricted. Why should we expend sustained effort? Surely the whole being is far beyond defilement. Who could believe in a method to polish it? Never is it apart from this very place. What is the use of a pilgrimage to practice it? And yet, if a hair's breadth of distinction exists, the gap is like that between heaven and earth. Once the slightest like or dislike arises, all is confused and the mind is lost. You should know that repeated migrations through aeons of time depend on a single moment's reflection. Losing the way in this world of defilement derives from a failure to stop deliberation. If you wish to transcend to the extreme beyond, just directly accede to the way. So, you guys on that? You got to directly accede to the way? The thing is, even though you may believe you are not directly acceding to the way, that may not be true. That's a belief you're holding. And so that last passage that we heard also is echoic in many ways of the affirming faith in mind, the Xin Xin Ming, which we chanted today. And the way that the third ancestor, who's the author of the Xin Xin Ming, says directly accede to the way is immediately affirm, not to. Enlightenment and delusion, not to. Buddhas and beings, not to. Dogen and Pema Chodron, not to. Once you have regulated your posture, take a breath and exhale fully. Swing to the left and right. Sitting fixedly, think of non-thinking. How do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking. This is the essential art of Zazen. Zazen is not the practice of jhana. Jhana, D-H-Y-A-N-A, is the Sanskrit word for meditation. And it, in fact, is the word that became in Chinese chan, which became in Japanese zen. And here's Dogen saying, Zazen is not the practice of jhana. My first teacher, Daido, used to begin all of his introductions to zen with three lovely strings of three negations each, and I can only remember two of the three. He says, Zazen isn't meditation, contemplation, or concentration. It's not calming the mind, filling the mind, or emptying the mind. And then he had another rhetorical flourish of that. But Dogen leaves it that Zazen is not the practice of jhana, which is what all of the sutras are talking about, and what all of the Theravadin practices, which talk about the perfection of samadhi and the states of meditation and the things that happen to your mind. Dogen says Zazen is not that. Zazen is not the practice of jhana. It is just the Dharma gate of ease and joy. It's one of my favorite sentences in all of Zen, the Dharma gate of ease and joy. That's what our practice is. That's what we're sitting in. Even when we're encountering difficulty, pain, fear, misery, it's entering into that as entering into the Dharma gate of ease and joy. It is the practice and verification of ultimate bodhi, ultimate enlightenment. The koan realized, baskets and cages cannot get to it. I don't know what baskets and cages cannot get to it, however it means. However, the word sutra literally means basket. And they were the teachings of the Buddha were originally like written on small somethings and then collected in these large baskets. Not true. The word sutra means thread. The word pitaka means basket. And so there's the sutra pitaka. There's the Abhidharma pitaka, the one of them, the Vinaya pitaka, which is the Abhidharma is about subtle and philosophical teachings on the mind. The Vinaya pitaka is about the rules of moral and ethical conduct, especially for the ordained. And then there's a third pitaka, which eludes me right now. So that might have to do with baskets. I don't know what has to do with cages. But so this practice of verification of ultimate bodhi, this Dharma gate of ease and joy, is the koan realized, which is also interesting because it's often... Dogen is often set up as there's Dogen's way and there's the koan way. And in fact, Dogen was trained in the koan and he was often speaking rather vociferously against the kind of formalization, ossification of the way the koan school had come to be practiced in certain lineages, but he in fact held them in high esteem. Just some of his peers, not so much in high esteem. Oh, and then I wanted to illuminate this. Illuminate is probably a strong word. Sitting fixedly, think. Sitting fixedly, first of all, is lovely. Think of not thinking. How do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking. Another translator, Kaz Tanahashi, says, how do you think of non-thinking? Beyond thinking, which for me is much more accessible, which is ironic since my Dharma name, the Dharma name I received from Daito, actually means non-thinking, Wu Nian, which in Chinese is Wu Nian. It also means no words, beyond all judgment. So, how do you think of not thinking? And this is one of the great koans of instruction in Shikantaza, is what on God's earth does that mean? So I'm going to read Carl Bielefeld's a paragraph here of his scholarly exposition of it, which is different from practice-based, but nonetheless it may spur something in you. Whether or not Dogen's practice of fixed sitting inherits the true transmission of the Buddha's. His preference here is for metaphysical mystery over mental mechanics. His preference for metaphysical mystery over mental mechanics succeeds to the orthodox tradition of the patriarchs, at least from the sixth patriarch on. So Dogen is presenting what Bielefeld is calling metaphysical mystery, which is these bizarre sentences such as think non-thinking, what does it mean? It means not thinking. And as opposed to the mental mechanics, which are the really elaborately presented explorations of the way the mind of apparently some meditators works, that's given a lot of space in the Theravada canon, in the Pali canon, the sutras. And those are the things that, from the beginning with Zen, Bodhidharma said, no, it's beyond the sutras. Zen is a direct pointing at the human heart. And the way Dogen directly points at the human heart is with, as it turns out, metaphysical mystery. Indeed, there seems little to choose between Wei Yan's non-thinking, Fei Su Liang, Chinese, and the patriarch's no thought, Wen Yan. Here and elsewhere in the literature, the term seem to operate much like its more famous cousin to express the inexpressible state of enlightened cognition. I think its more famous cousin is no thought, about which we'll talk shortly. Where the Southern School texts, and this is where, so if some of you, if you've been to a retreat, we've chanted the identity and of relative and absolute, with has the way, which has the line, but in the way there is no Northern and Southern patriarch. So there used to be this kind of rivalry of the way Zen was discussed. The Northern way is this way, the Southern way is this way. That's some of what he's alluding to, and that's some of what maybe Dogen is pointing to or cutting through. Where the Southern School texts like to define their no thought as non-discriminatory thought of suchness, which is actually a really cool phrase. And so there's a way in which non-discriminatory thought of suchness is allowing all things to be just as they are. All things are as they are, as we chanted in the Faith in Mind. Wei Yan chooses to describe his non-thinking as thinking of not thinking, where Dogen identifies the right thought of the non-deluded mind with non-thinking. A classical author like Hui Hei prefers to call it no thought. So, small little foray into that. We're going to hear more about right thought and shortly. If you grasp the point of this practice, the four elements of the body will become light and at ease. The spirit will be fresh and sharp. Thoughts will be correct and clear. The flavor of the Dharma will sustain the spirit, and you will be calm, pure, and joyful. My caveat is that if you're trying to become calm, pure, and joyful, you will, in fact, miss it. And again, this is what the third patriarch says in the Xinxin Ming. And if somebody wanted to quote that line, that would be helpful to me. He says, attempts to stop activity will fill you with activity. That's the same thing. One who has already achieved clarification of the truth may be likened to the dragon gaining the water or the tiger taking to the mountains. The dragon is the supreme master of the water. And even one who has not yet achieved it by letting the wind fan the flame will not have to make much effort. Just assent to it. You will not be deceived. Just assent to it. And this is so, that's really, really beautiful. And that is why I think the phrase letting it be is much more useful than letting it go. Letting it go sounds like it's a little more doing. But if we just assent to it, things as they are, whatever it is, whatever Dharma is before you, assent to it, and you will not be deceived. Nevertheless, as the path gets higher, demons flourish, and agreeable and disagreeable experiences are manifold. Yet if you just keep right thought present, none of them can obstruct you. Begging the question, obviously, of what is right thought. And so this is, I think it's a reference to one of the folds on the Eightfold Path, and I think we can take it as right mindfulness. So it's the clear, and it's interesting. So you hear the word like clear knowing or something, or clear thinking in the context of the Dharma, and you know, and I think there's a literality to that, clear in the sense of transparent. You can see through it. It's the awareness that sees through all delusive thoughts as they arise, so that they are in fact clear rather than opaque. And right thought is continual awareness of suchness. And right thought is further the thought that isn't looking out there, that isn't looking for answers out there, that isn't looking for comfort out there, that isn't looking for liberation from suffering anywhere other than the sphere in which you have complete mastery, like the dragon in the water or the tiger in the mountains. And that sphere is your own mind. And this is true, it's even as your mind fails, even as your body fails, none of them can obstruct you. Yeah. One last excerpt. When you arise from sitting, and here's a point that I realized that I should be making in beginning instruction more, and I haven't been. When you arise from sitting, move slowly and arise calmly. Do not be hasty or rough. At all times, protect and maintain the power of samadhi. In studying and investigating it, you transcend its higher workings without abating.